Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Well, we're doing what we do about quarterly. We're compiling another UPR community book list, and this day with the holiday twist, heading into holidays, maybe you can tell us what you're going to give us gifts or help hint to what you're going to hope to receive as a gift, as a book. This is a great opportunity, I know for me. I get a lot of my great reads from this program. We pool together as avid readers, as many public radio listeners are, and share good reads. So that's what we're doing today. We want to know what you're reading. You can email your list to us. It could be one book or many. upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And this could be fiction, nonfiction, young adult, children's books. One suggestion, as I said, or many are welcome. We're going to hear later in the program from Catherine Weller of Weller Bookworks, the latest and greatest. David Everett will also join us from Back and Beyond Books in Moab. But throughout the hour, we'll join, as we always are, by Elaine Thatcher, who is right now, I'm reading from your email signature, Elaine, Proposal Development Specialist, Utah State University Extension.
Yes.
So thanks, thanks for coming back in.
Thank you. It's great. Always great to be here.
So as we established last time or the time before, you tried retirement, didn't take.
Yeah, that's right. I just had to go back to work.
So you're a doer, I guess, yeah. But also a reader, which is doing.
Yes, right? So, I get way more done now that I'm working than I did when I was not working.
Really, really. That's the opposite of many people I talk to.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, they say, you know, if you want to get something done, ask a busy person,
yeah,
because you have to allot your time.
Right.
And I've found that I get more done now, both in my personal life and at work, since I'm working.
Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who retire, and they say I'm busier now than I ever was. But it just depends on what you have going, and
mm-hmm,
so
yep.
I'm sure Extension is happy to have you. Let's just jump in. Elaine, well, I want to start with you took a couple of my suggestions.
I did.
And I'm batting about 500.
That's exactly right.
Which in baseball would be great. So I guess, first of all, tell me about the one you didn't like.
Okay, the one I didn't care for was Louis L'Amour.
Okay.
And maybe it's the book that I chose, which was a collection of stories about a character named Baudry or Baudry.
Yeah.
But... Mm-hmm. But I can't say, it was just full of all the tropes that you hear and that you see in the old Westerns, and it was just not interesting to me. But I know it's one of your favorites.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, the Baudry stories are not my absolute favorites, but, any L'Amour is L'Amour, so I think you give it a fair shot. Yeah, for me, he starts out at a white-hot pace, and it only gets, I like the fast pace.
Uh-huh.
And he writes about young men, right, kind of forming their character, and
yeah,
and a lot of stoicism. And
yeah, but it's just all the same old stuff about, they have to draw their gun on somebody and save the damsel, and, it's just no.
Yeah, not for you. Not for you. Yeah, yeah. You do learn a lot from L'Amour.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to go out if you time travel into the Old West, which mm-hmm, you're probably not going to do. For example, you don't look into the fire.
You don't.
Because you might have to look away into the dark and shoot somebody, and you'd have spots in your eyes. That's, Another thing is you don't put notches on your gun for people you kill. That's a tin horn move.
I see. Okay.
So you learn some things. Yeah. I will say some of his more ambitious stuff, I think, is you might go for a little more. The Lonesome Gods is kind of a massive.
Yeah, I might try something a little
massive,
more.
Kind of ambitious work, yeah. But anyway, and he has some non-Western stuff as well. But anyway, so tell me about the hit.
Okay, the one I did like that you recommend. If you're a new listener to this show, you have to know that Tom always recommends Louis L'Amour and P.G. Wodehouse.
That's right.
Or Woodhouse, depending on how you pronounce
right.
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, Woodhouse was fabulous. I mean, I haven't finished it. I have a collection of the complete works on my Kindle, so I can just go to it whenever I want to and pick up a story or two. And oh gosh, they're so funny.
Yeah.
They are so funny and so witty. Just delightful escapist. I mean,
yeah.
I'm going to be talking today about some other escapist books, but this is great escapist literature.
Yeah, it's farce. It's
yeah. It's just it's absolutely delightful. Yeah.
And you have that old trope of the idiot master and the wise
yeah.
servant, right?
Yes.
In Jeeves and Wooster, it's
which I love. Yeah.
The Molinar stories. This fellow named Molinar is, I don't know if you read any Molinar stories.
No, I didn't.
It's set in this bar called the Angler's Rest. It's fishermen. And so Mr. Molinar takes over every conversation and tells these fantastic stories about his relatives, kind of in the fisherman vein. One story is more more exaggerated than the next. Yeah, I love Woodhouse. Well, and you're in good company. Tony Blair, apparently a former prime minister of England.
Yeah.
Apparently, after a hard day of prime ministering, he would go home and
yeah, Tony
and
I,
read.
We're like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, very good. All right. Yeah, I'll take a 500 batting average. That's good. So what do you have on your first on your list here?
Okay, so this was a real mixed quarter for me. I'm mostly light stuff. But I have to say, probably one of the ones that really stayed with me the most is The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. I may have gotten that recommendation from this show. I don't remember. The author is Mark Haddon, Haddon. And the protagonist and narrator is what I would guess is an autistic boy. It never says that. A young teenager, I think he's about 16 or 15, something like that, and autistic. And the world is seen from his point of view, and it is absolutely so insightful. And, you know, I don't know if Haddon has had experience with autistic kids or is himself or whatever, but you sort of see the world from this boy's point of view. And there is a mystery in it. That he wants to solve, and he gets some shocking discoveries in it. But really, the most appealing thing about this book for me was this point of view from this young man who, he decides he's going to bark when he feels threatened. You know, I barked so people would stay away from me. You know, it was done for a good reason, you know. I mean, you understand his reasoning for why he does things. It's just really an excellent book.
So this is The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime.
Yep.
Mark Haddon. All right. Very good.
Yep.
What's next?
Another one I loved was Tracks by Louise Erdrich. I've had this book on my shelf for years. Louise Erdrich is a Native American writer. I'm trying to remember what tribe she is. Maybe Ojibwe. I don't remember exactly because it's been a while since I read it. But she is well known for expounding on the life ways of these Native American people. And this particular book, it's actually part of a series. The series is called Love Medicine, and this was number 3. But the characters, and it shows them at the time when the white man is coming in to Minnesota, and I believe it's Minnesota, if my memory is serving me correctly, the cutting down of the forests and the taking of Native American land and the daily lives of these people who were sort of facing change in a big way that they hadn't faced before, and the difficulties, it's really a very heart-filled book, I think. Tracks is the name of it by Louise Erdrich.
Louise Erdrich, yeah. I don't know that I've read much Louise Erdrich. I get it recommended to me often. My sister Jane is a big
Erdrich fan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in our family, we think we have Ojibwe heritage.
Oh, interesting.
On my dad's side. Anyway, so Tracks is the latest one, Louise Erdrich. Very good. Give us one more here.
Okay, another one that I really liked was Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe. This is an African story. And again, this was just coincidental that I happened to pick something up like this that was, again, at the time of contact between Europeans and Africans. And so we start out with an African village living its traditional life, and the main character, who's a big man in the village. But then we see these clergymen, white clergymen, who come in with different ideas about how things are done and different concepts of space even and property and, you know, just and what's appropriate and the clash of cultures. And it's lovely, but it's also sad. Mm. It's but I really recommend this. Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe.
Things Fall Apart. Very good. Yeah. I want to mention these are a couple of books that I'm reading from in preparation for a program tomorrow. So we'll give a shout out to it and hope you tune in tomorrow as well on Access Utah. This is an example, Elaine, of when you have a radio program that, you know, it's nice to have a radio program sometimes.
Yeah.
I was just reading, I don't know, Atlantic Magazine or somewhere. This was in the lead up to the election that we just had. I was reading that quite a few people on Capitol Hill were reading this book because it reflects our times. And this is John Grinspan. He's a historian, the lead historian at the Museum of History at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. This is from 2021. So people were going back to 2021 because it was becoming apparent that this was parallel to our times. It's called The Age of Acrimony, How Americans Fought to Fix Their Democracy, 1865 to 1915. So I'll just read a little bit from the blurb. Democracy was broken. That's what many Americans believed in the decades after the Civil War. Shaken by economic and technological disruption, they sought safety in aggressive tribal partisanship. The results were the loudest, closest, most violent elections in U.S. history, driven by vibrant campaigns that drew our highest ever voter turnouts. And then it goes on to say reformers came in, made democracy a little more distant, but more civil. And so the trade-offs there, right? But you can see this period, 1865-1915, parallels our time quite a bit. And so John Grinspan wrote this book, 2021. We reached out to him, and he's coming on tomorrow.
Oh, great. That sounds great. Well, you know, this isn't a book. Well, she has a book, Heather Cox Richardson. Excuse me. She started a thing called Letters from an American, and she's on the left side of the political spectrum, but she's also a historian who can draw parallels between our past and our present. And you can subscribe to her letters. You can just have them in your email box. But she also has a book, but I don't remember the title of it. But she's very insightful about, you know, this isn't the first time we've had, you know, division in the country, and we can go back and look at these precedents, and she's great.
I'm just trying to look at her, let's see, her latest book, Democracy Awakening, apparently, yeah, from last year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, you give me an idea. So, maybe we'll reach out to Heather Cox Richardson.
Oh, I think you'd have a lot of fans if you were able to interview her.
Yeah.
Maybe have her come speak.
Right. Exactly. Let me just mention one more. We'll be talking about two books with John Grinspan tomorrow, because his latest book was published just this year. It's called Wide Awake, The Forgotten Force That Elected Lincoln and Spurred the Civil War. So we'll be talking about that book as well. So we'll put this on our list. I'm just reading them. A little behind the scenes, I don't read the whole book. I read as much as I can and get my whistle wetted, as it were. And then I get to talk to the author, so it's not a bad gig. So anyway, those are two books, and tune in again tomorrow to hear more about that from the author.
That sounds great. Do we have a moment before we bring in a bookseller?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. I want to just put in a plug. I was listening this morning, and one of the hosts, I don't remember who it was, said he talked about the NPR books we love. There are 351 books on this list. It's put together by NPR staffers, their favorite books. of the year, and oh my goodness, what a great list. And you can find anything. I guarantee you will find something you want to read on this list. And they have it, so you can search it by genre if you like. And you can, I mean, they have everything from science fiction to nonfiction to biography to self-help, you know. I was just noticing that they have there's a new Salman Rushdie book in the list, and I do like Salman Rushdie. I've read a couple of his books, and so I'm looking forward to that. But gosh, this list could keep me busy for a long time. So books it's just if you search books we love, you should come up with books we love NPR.
Okay,
it should come up.
All right, and I'm reading here. There are 4,000 books on their complete 12-year archive. They do this.
Yeah,
yearly,
you can go back by years. You can choose the year you want to search, mm-hmm. and oh my goodness, so much good reading.
Yeah, so yeah, that's a great resource for you as well. And we're compiling a UPR community book list right now. Well, let's go to break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Catherine Weller from Weller Bookworks. I have with me Elaine Thatcher for the hour, and I'm looking for your list. This really helps me out to get some books I'd like to give as gifts or books I'd like to read. A lot of times books I haven't even thought about. So get your list to us at upraccess@gmail.com. upraccess@gmail.com. We'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. I'm here with Elaine Thatcher, and we're soliciting your suggestions, reading suggestions. So you can get your email to us at upraccess@gmail.com. We bring on now Catherine Weller from Weller Bookworks. Catherine, thanks for joining us.
Hello there. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, good,
nice
good
to have you.
So we're heading into the holidays. This, I guess for many retailers, is a big time for you, I guess. Does that hold true now?
Yep. It's still a big time. It's for, I think, a lot of booksellers, it's not necessarily the whole Black Friday thing where it makes our year, but it's an important time for us, and that's because, of course, people come around to see us who may not have been able to see us earlier in the year, but also publishing. Some of the biggest books of the year come out for the holidays, and so it's always rather thrilling to start the season and see what new books are coming out.
And I assume people still give books as gifts.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. And publishing has noticed, of course, so we see a lot more attention to things. This has been for at least a decade, but it's just growing. The attention to the what's called the package, the way the book looks on the outside. So novel designs with dust jackets or no dust jackets and plain boards for hardcovers. Things like sprayed edges and stenciled edges. The fantasy and young adult world has just gone off the hook with that. And so there are all these kinds of wonderful ways to make books feel special by the way they look, not just by what's inside.
That's interesting.
Well, that's
nice
interesting,
to hear that art is flourishing.
Yeah.
I mean, visual art.
Well, Catherine, let's jump in. What's first on your list?
All right. First on my list, there's a lot of big stuff coming out right now. But before I deal with that, I want to deal with what I think is one of the loveliest and most affecting novels of the year. It's called There Are Rivers in the Sky by Elif Shafak. And this is one of those narratives that I've previously described as a tapestry. There are many stories that are woven together to make this big, beautiful story. It begins with the story of a child who is born to a mudlark, the people who sift through the dirt and the muck on the shores of the Thames River when the tide has gone out. And they go in there and they dig for treasures. This happened to be in the 1700s when people were literally digging for something they could sell for food. A pregnant woman one day goes into labor, and with the help of her community of other equally impoverished people, delivers this child who ends up being a remarkable child who remembers everything, including the snow that was falling out of the sky when he was born, and the one snowflake that fell onto his tongue, and that little drop of water follows this narrative through and through and through. So it follows this child through to his adulthood, where he is a savant and does things like work in publishing. This is the nascent publishing business, and translating the Epic of Gilgamesh. There are people in modern-day Britain who are refugees from assorted wars in the Middle East, also interacting in different ways with the Epic of Gilgamesh. It all pivots around Gilgamesh and water. And it has a bit of the Yazidi populace, another refugee group. So all of these disempowered refugees who manage nevertheless to make beautiful lives in some ways, which is not to minimize their struggle at all. But it, the language is beautiful. It is just, it transports one. It sweeps one away. It is a lovely, lovely book that I highly recommend.
Who's the author on that?
Elif Shafak.
How do you spell that last name?
S-H-A-F-A-K.
Yeah, that does sound lovely.
There are rivers in the sky. Yeah, it does sound great.
Yes. Yeah, just the title itself is a little poem, right?
And yeah.
So many of the paragraphs are just these beautiful little poems.
Well, what's next?
Okay, so couple of big things. Last week was a huge publishing week because Haruki Murakami, who many, many people know, he's written for years and years, Japanese author. He's translated into English, and he is always on the short list for the Nobel, as far as people can tell, has come out with a new book called The City and Its Uncertain Walls. He is a magical writer himself in a lot of ways, and this year, this book, it feels like he's really back. His previous books were good, but they didn't have that old magic that Murakami had. City and Its Uncertain Walls does. It is, my goodness, it's a big old sprawling thing that centers around a man who falls in love with a young woman and tracks her back to this village. And because he's so in love with her, he decides to enter this village. Despite the fact that it is surrounded by walls, he will never be able to leave again. And you have to have your shadow removed from you when you walk through those gates. He does all of that. He goes in. It is not what he expected, and he manages to come out despite all promises and reunite with his shadow before it fades away. But that city and its walls come back as he goes into his life working in a library in a small city in western Japan and finding this child who isn't connecting with his community and wants to connect with that community. It's just this really mystical story about, really, what does make us human? What does that mean? And what does it mean to be alive? There are ghosts in here, black cats. Murakami's love of music is legendary. So there's a lot of that in here, too. It's a big, nice, crunchy read.
Would you call it a novel or a collection of stories? Oh, okay.
It is a novel. It's a pretty substantial novel. It's not like hugely fat, but it's going to take you some time to get through it. It's almost 450 pages. So it's a good read for a couple of long winter nights.
Yeah, that's the nice thing, a long one that you can just burrow into.
Exactly, and you really can with this because it's so atmospheric.
So Haruki Murakami, City and Its Uncertain Walls. By the way, I went to his website, kind of an interestingly designed website, just one little parenthetical.
No, I'm sure it is. I've never seen it, but I'm going to go now.
Yeah. all right, well, that sounds fun. What's next on your list?
Okay, next on my list, it also came out last week, another huge book that people have been waiting and waiting for. And this is called The Service Berry, Abundance and Reciprocity in the Natural World. Of course, the title lets you know that it's hitting a lot of points for the time right now, this connection with nature and finding commonalities between, say, indigenous knowledge, folkways, and science. And this is huge also because it's Robin Wall Kimmerer, the author of Braiding Sweetgrass, which has been beloved for, I don't even know how long.
A while,
More than 10 years now. Mm-hmm. Yes, right?
Yeah.
And she is an indigenous woman and a scientist as well. This is a lovely little gift book that gets into the richness of the natural world and what it means to, what abundance is and what it means to share that abundance and move forward as a people or as a society. It's charming and marvelous, and I'll tell you, it's going to go out of stock soon. It published last week, and then I'm just watching on the publisher's website the number of copies available going down and down and down. So don't wait on this one if you're a Robin Wall Kimmerer fan.
So it's called Service Berry.
Yes.
I should mention it's on the NPR book list.
Okay.
Oh, is it?
It's on the Books We Love list, yes.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to look at that. I heard them announce it this morning, and I haven't seen it yet. So I'm glad to know it's there. It's a worthy
feast.
Choice.
It's a feast.
Yeah. All right, yep. The Service Berry, Abundance and Reciprocity in the Natural World, Robin Wall Kimmerer. Yeah, that's great. That'd make a good gift, yeah. What's next on the list?
I'm going to stay in nonfiction, actually. And there is a book that isn't what I thought it was, and it is so good anyway. It's called Every Valley, The Desperate Lives and Troubled Times That Made Handel's Messiah by Charles King. I thought this would be about the Messiah. And the first couple of chapters are about the Messiah and its huge impact on society and what the Messiah is. Utah's annual Messiah sing-along is mentioned in the introduction as a way of pointing to how significant this piece of music is to the holidays and to Western culture. What's really very interesting about it is this is really an Easter piece. Somehow it's pivoted over to the holidays for reasons that I don't understand and isn't fully explained in this book, because this book is more than the Messiah. Like all great art history, and music history is art history, it's a book about the time. It's actual history. And so what we have is this very nice, deep dive into the history right around the early Enlightenment and the Enlightenment. And there are, in London, because Handel did emigrate to London, and that's where he composed the Messiah, at that time there was such a cross-fertilization of intellects and personalities. They're all in here, as well as the trouble with royalty and societal transition and what the Enlightenment meant and what the slave trade meant to the Enlightenment, which is a very interesting thing. Mm. So it ends up not being so much music history, but history. If you've got a history box that loves music, this ticks both of your boxes. It's a beautiful cover, just tailor-made for holiday giving.
What was that title again?
Every Valley.
Oh, yeah.
The Desperate Lives and Troubled Times That Made Handel's Messiah.
Charles King, the author, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Yeah, well, maybe a couple more?
All right. Some things that are to be a little quicker about. That we've got one more gigantic, at least for Weller's, release coming out, and it's not tomorrow, but the Tuesday following, December 6th. Brandon Sanderson, Utah author, fantasy god, is coming out with the fifth volume in his Stormlight Archives series. And if you're a fantasy reader, this is a big deal. It's also a big book because the Stormlight Archive is, they are epic fantasy sagas. This one is 1,300, almost 1,350 pages. And people are just so excited about this, as they should be. This is a great fantasy series. So you got a fantasy person in your life, grab one of these. Also, there's a lovely, lovely book by Maria Popova called The Universe in Verse. The subtitle is 15 Portals to Wonder Through Science and Poetry. And it starts with a poem about something and then begins to talk about that concept within science. It has lovely little illustrations. It's a small, pretty, pretty book. Just, again, tailor-made for putting in someone's hands. And this is the kind of book that's got a really good subtitle, Portals to Wonder. So you can sit down and read a poem and read a bit of the chapter and ponder that, and then come back to it later and do it again. It's not something you need to feel like you plow through. It's really nice for those moments when you really do want a little bit of wonder in your life.
That sounds great.
That does sound great. Yeah, tell us the title and author again.
Universe in Verse by Maria Popova.
All right, wonderful. Maybe have time for one more.
All right, I'm going to hit a kid's book. In Praise of Mystery by Ada Limon and Peter Cease. Ada Limon is the poet laureate of the United States, and people who know kids' books know Peter Cease because he is an extraordinary illustrator, just beautiful. They united to make this book that is based on the poem that Ada Limon wrote to send into space on the Europa Clipper. They're going to go study Jupiter's moon, and they've sent some pieces of the Earth with it. She wrote this just stunning poem about seeking and exploring and wonder and majesty. It's a short poem. The pages with Peter Cease's illustrations are rich and lush and warm. They have this palette of the warm blue sky. It's a great read aloud book, and the poem itself is just lovely. The last stanza says, "We too are made of wonders, of great and ordinary loves, of small invisible worlds, of a need to call out through the dark." Mm-hmm. And this book, it's a great bedtime book, I think. It's a great book, again, for that sense of wonder and love and mystery.
Wonderful.
Oh, that is great. Yeah, good to get a children's book in there. Nothing like a good children's book, yeah.
Agreed.
I like to give those to friends, you know, who have children, and they seem to appreciate getting good quality young person's literature.
Yeah, and there's a lot of books for young people out there, as there should be, but there are some that are just treasures and keepsakes, and I think this will become one of those.
Yeah.
Well, Catherine, thanks so much. Check out Weller Bookworks, obviously, and thanks for these suggestions.
Thank you so much. I'll be emailing these in to you.
Okay, thank you.
Have a lovely holiday.
I will. You too.
Thanks.
Thank you. Catherine Weller, Weller Bookworks. Check them out. A lot of interesting suggestions there. Elaine, maybe one more from your list before we go to another break?
Sure. I hit a classic this time, and it was a very quick read. It's C.S. Lewis, The Magician's Nephew, which is number 6 in the Narnia series.
Mm.
Back decades ago when I read the Narnia books, I kind of quit partway through there. I think there are 7. And I think I was so attached to those characters in the very first book or two that I had a hard time moving on to other characters in the other books. But this one, The Magician's Nephew, is about the beginnings of Narnia. It's how it was created and where the White Witch came from, for instance. So I was doing something else. I heard somebody refer to a quote from it. I had to find that quote. I go down rabbit holes a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can read it in a couple of hours. And it's it was just delightful. Once again, I was reminded how much I liked, how much I like C.S. Lewis's writing.
C.S. Lewis, The Magician's Nephew.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, check out the entire, if you haven't read The Chronicles of Narnia, read the whole thing.
Yes, right? Yeah.
Well, great. Well, let's do go to a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with David Everett from Back and Beyond Books in Moab. We'll have more following this. Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. We are compiling a UPR community book list, this time with a holiday twist. Maybe you could suggest some books you want to give as gifts. We do this about quarterly, and we're looking for your suggestions to read or to give as gifts. You can get your list to us by email to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And we're turning to some booksellers as well to get the latest and greatest. So we turn next to David Everett, Back and Beyond Books. David, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are things in Moab? I know in the summertime there was flooding. I was down there just after that for a program. What's going on now?
All is well here in Moab. It's the tail end of our busy season, but we'll have a little spike here over Thanksgiving, a visitation, and it's the perfect time to really be hanging out in the desert because it's not too hot, it's not too cold.
Yeah, off season, so I guess it's turns down to a dull roar in Moab, does it?
It does. It's my favorite time of year, honestly, because you really can be outside and hiking around and being on the trails and enjoying it without necessarily quite the crowds that you usually have in town.
All right.
Yeah, I love shoulder seasons.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Back and Beyond Books, that's a great little bookshop there in Moab. What's first on your list, David?
I got a bunch I wanted to just run through, I think, fairly quickly. Some with, I'd say, a little bit of light, a little bit of dark. The top of the list is the brand new title by Robin Wall Kimmerer, The Service Berry. You know, she's one of our all-time sort of bestseller authors here in Back and Beyond Books. And this is the perfect stocking stuffer. It's a smaller title. It's a little hardback, but it really highlights the approach of reciprocity versus accumulation in terms of how we should live our lives and how the Service Berry Tree embodies that. It's a beautiful little book.
Great to have something new from Robin Wall Kimmerer. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
It's great to have something new from Robin Wall Kimmerer. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a while, so we've been looking forward to that, looking forward to selling it. We have been selling a ton of a title lately that didn't come out this year, but came out a few years ago, but it's seen a resurgence. It's called Never Whistle at Night, and it's an indigenous dark fiction anthology, and it's just a fantastic collection of stories about what causes the evil spirits to and follow you home and what you should do about it. And it's been a really great seller for us. That's Never Whistle at Night, and edited by Shane Hawk. Hmm. And, we've really enjoyed that one here. In a slightly darker tone as well, I just finished a book by Emily Witt called Health and Safety, and it's the memoir of sorts, and it's a narration of her time in the last 5 years in the sort of club party scene in New York City. And she's a writer for The New Yorker, and she certainly lives for The New York Times, I believe, and just her way of narrating this experience in the sort of underworld of the scene in Brooklyn and New York during the pandemic and before and after is a gripping story. I can't recommend it enough, but definitely not something if you're looking for like an inspirational story about how to live your life, necessarily. But highly recommend. I couldn't put it down. Moving on really, really quickly, another one that we are starting to sell a lot of, and I saw a fantastic review in the New York Times of. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I will because I am as Strike Zone Gen X as it gets, is the name of this band is R.E.M., and it's a biography of the band by Peter Carlin, who's an incredible writer of And he has written this really, apparently, really well-received biography of this of REM, which is really, you know, sort of an archetypal band of the 80s and 90s, and how these four college friends made this band happen and saw it through from beginning to the end. And so I'm looking forward to reading that one for sure.
Yeah.
And I got a couple others that really are sort of front of mind here. One is a recent publication actually by the University of Utah Press, and it is called A Watershed Moment, The American West in the Age of Limits. And so as you can imagine, this is the kind of title that's really in our strike zone down here in Moab and in the desert. And it's a collection of stories that talks about towns and, sorry about that, talks about towns and situations in the Intermountain West and what's happening in terms of reaching limits and bumping up against levels of sustainability in these communities. So if you're interested in the New West and the future of the West, I highly recommend this title by the University of Utah.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. And in the same part of the world, but from a different era, a new title is out by a man named Tom Clavin. It's called Bandit Heaven, and it's the story of the hole-in-the-wall gangs and their final chapter of the Wild West set in the, I believe, 1890s. And so really, you know, kind of takes the Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, a bunch of other characters from that era who did their business in the Intermountain West, in the desert in particular, and really weaves together their stories in a way that's super enjoyable about, and you know, so if you're interested in outlaws and the American West, that's a great brand new title out. And Tom Clavin's a great writer. He's written a bunch of books about the West that people have enjoyed over the years, Tombstone being probably the most famous of them. And then last, really, since I've been kind of rat-a-tat about it, I'm halfway through a book by a man named Erwin Chemerinsky, who is he's one of the few people who probably transcends the legal world into, I don't say pop culture, but certainly into the into more mainstream writing. And he recently published a book called No Democracy Lasts Forever. And it's been a really interesting sort of path through the history of American democracy and where it came from and where it may be headed. And he's, as a legal scholar and a constitutional scholar, he brings a level of authority and knowledge to this topic that I haven't seen as much necessarily in other writers who take more of a political bent. But I think from a purely, it's not only the academic standpoint, but from the perspective of an academic who writes for a more mainstream audience, Chemerinsky does a really great job laying out a case here for what our situation is here in America right now.
Yeah, tell me the author again.
His name is Erwin Chemerinsky.
Okay.
Your mention of a watershed moment, which sounds like one I would like to read, reminds me of a book that I read, gosh, years ago. I just looked it up. It came out in 1992, but it has stayed with me all these years. It's called Little Town Blues, Voices from the Changing West by Ray Ringholz.
Uh-huh.
Ray C. Ringholz. And that's Ray with an E on the end, R-A-Y-E. But her topic is small towns in the West that get loved to death, basically. Mm. And Moab,
yes.
Moab is one of them. Santa Fe, Steamboat Springs, Aspen, Park City.
Telluride, certainly.
Yep, yep. Yeah. All these little towns. And you know, among the things that she talks about are the, you know, when outsiders begin to love a place so much, everything gets disrupted. The economy, the environment, you know, just everything. And people who work there, comes down to service jobs, and people who work there can't afford to live there. You know, it's a similar pattern that goes through all of these little towns that have become huge destinations, you know, for tourists.
Draws, yes.
Yeah. So it,
Yeah, very much so.
It's a small little book, but it made a big impression on me, and it kind of makes me want, it definitely makes me want to read this book that you mentioned, A Watershed Moment. Who was the author on that again?
Yeah, this is a, it's a collection of essays by a range of authors, including Betsy Gates Quammens, probably would be the most well-known, but it's edited by Robert Frodeman and Evelyn Brister and Luther Probst. So,
well, it sounds great. Yeah,
good book.
That's a nice list you gave us.
Yeah. And by the way, for our listeners, you can check out my interview with Robert Frodeman from a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, David Everett, thank you so much. Great suggestions.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Good luck with Back Beyond Books. It's a great, great place.
Have a good holiday.
Thanks. Looking forward to seeing you all down here. Take care.
Okay, thank Bye-bye. You. Thank you. Elaine, we got an email here with several suggestions. This is from Dr. Kathleen Kavara-Kaur. She says, Hi, Tom. I just finished an interesting, well-written book that gives a firsthand account of the period of time from 2008 to 2016 during the Syrian War and American-Afghan War and European Open Border Refugee Year of 2015. It contains suspense, romance, poignant disappointments, painful difficulties, and dramatic success for people fleeing Middle East war-torn countries. I hear the author's living in Salt Lake City, this area this year, so... Mm. Ought to reach out to him and have him on the program. It's by Matthew Akins, and it's called The Naked Don't Fear the Water. The subtitle is An Underground Journey with Afghan Refugees. The Naked Don't Fear the Water, Underground Journey with Afghan Refugees. The author is Matthew Akins. Then Kathleen goes on to say, any book by John McPhee. So particularly Annals of the Former World. By John McPhee, Pulitzer Prize in 1999, looks like amazing compilation of four books, Basin and Range, In Suspect Terrain, Rising from the Plains, and Assembling California, chronicling conversations with down-home regional and eminent geologists to explain so much about the geology of the USA, who knew the Appalachian Mountains that we know are the fourth of a series of mountain ranges in that local, Californian is actually a series of archipelagos smashed and glued together by plate tectonics. I didn't know that. And then finally, she says, two books by wonderful and well-researched writer Andrea Wolf. So The Invention of Nature, Alexander von Humboldt's New World, and Magnificent Rebels, The First Romantics and the Invention of the Self. Those are both by Andrea Wolf, so The Invention of Nature and Alexander von Humboldt's New World and Magnificent Rebels, The First Romantics and Invention of the Self. And she closes, I so enjoy your show every day. Well, thank you, Dr. Kathleen Kavara-Kaur. So we'll add those to the list as well.
Great.
So we just have about 2 minutes left. Elaine, what's another book on your list?
Let me second her recommendation of John McPhee. I worked back in the 80s in southern New Jersey where there is, believe it or not, there is a million-acre pine forest.
Ah.
And he wrote a book called The Pine Barrens that I read then. And, yeah, I highly recommend. Well, the other things I looked at were I read a couple of lighter weight mysteries. One was what you probably would call a cozy mystery, and I kind of run out of patience with those. It was recommended to me, Peg and Rose Solve a Murder, Senior Sleuths, basically. And it's and the author is Lorian Berenson, and it's okay. But, you know, these cozy mysteries have a formula, and they get a little too precious for me. Anyway, so... But, you know, it's an easy, quick read, and the characters are likable. One that I'm reading now is the Thursday Murder Club, which I would say is elevated a little bit above that formulaic cozy mystery level. It's about a group of senior citizens in a home who encounter a murder and then try to solve it. And it's, I would say, the characters and the plotting is more interesting than some of the ones I usually call cozy mysteries that are too formulaic for me.
Yeah, semi-cozy mystery maybe.
Yeah, so it's called The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman.
Okay, wonderful. We'll have Elaine's entire list on our website, upr.org, later today. Well, Elaine, thanks so much for coming in.
It's always fun.
So keep reading, and happy holidays to you.
Yeah, you too. That's all out there.
So we'll have this list on our website, upr.org, and keep those emails coming. We'll add to those as you send those in, upraccess@gmail.com. Thanks so much to everyone for listening. Thanks, Elaine, and happy holidays to everybody.